If you want this podcast free of ads, follow us now on patreon.com/David.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Williams.
To understand the economy, you have to understand human nature.
This podcast is powered by Acast.
How you doing there? It is podcast time. And as if he was sitting in the White House listening, John, to our last podcast where we talked about the extraordinary, almost monopoly that Taiwan has on semiconductors and chips, Joe Biden announced yesterday on Twitter that in the future, the semiconductor industry will be made in America.
But now, Mark, you know that Sleepy Joe was sitting there listening to us. You know that.
He got the COVID. He had nothing else to do.
Yep,
and he said, you know what? I'm going to listen to these Paddies, these Irish lads. They seem to know what they're talking about.
It wouldn't be the first time either, by the way.
It wouldn't be the first time either. But I mean, it is an interesting addition to this. Actually, by the way, this podcast, we're actually going to talk about the return of Malthus. We're going to talk about the environment. We're going to talk about limits of growth. On Patreon, one or two of you have been asking about steady state economics, steady growth, zero growth economics. We're going to talk about that. We're also going to talk about the coming clash between economists, in effect, and environmentalists over the precious resources of the world. And there's plenty of evidence, even this summer, that resources are depleting. And again, that's all against the background of fears of famine, largely as a result of increases in food prices. But the general idea is a world with a fixed amount of resources. So we're going to talk about that. But getting back to Joe, what he was talking about, John, was the American fear. And I'm not too sure this is great for Taiwan, that he said in the future, semiconductors will be made in America. Now, what he's basically saying is it is too dangerous for us to have an extended supply chain which involves possibly countries like Taiwan, which are in the sight of enemy countries like China. That's what he was saying. It's probably very, very good news for Intel if you are actually an Intel worker or anybody living around Kildare or anybody involved in Intel, because obviously Intel is the biggest American player in that game. And it does sound as if what the Americans are saying is this is a strategic industry. It is a crucially important industry. Our fighter jets, let alone our iPhones and our laptops, but our fighter jets need these components. And you know what? The last thing we're going to do is allow America to be hostage to some sort of operation by China in Taiwan. If I was Taiwanese, I'd be thinking,
But is the subtext of this that he's kind of going, actually, lads, if China invade Taiwan, you know, we're not going to win that one.
We're going to have to concede Taiwan.
That's
what I think it is, because what he's basically saying is we might not win it, and as a result, we cannot countenance a future where our technology is hostage to the whims of Beijing.
So we're going to,
in the old American expression, bring it all back home. And
Great Bob Dylan album.
Oh, no. Speaking of music, right? We're going to do a podcast on the economics of music next week. But I was watching the other night Woodstock 99.
Oh, yeah.
Documentary on Netflix. Did you see it?
No, it's on my list. I have to watch it. One of my mates, Al was one of the accountants on that. And he was there.
The accountant
on code.
it's true because Ozzie Kilkenny was there because Ozzie Kilkenny was one of the partners. But the accountants come off really badly.
Yeah.
Because at every stage, they were cutting corners, squeezing everything out of, basically out of the customers. And you could see the way in which the vibe began to change against the organizers. And it's mayhem. And as somebody who organizes the Book Festival of Dalkey and Kilkenomics, right? What you realize is that behind the scenes, the production is everything. Nothing else matters, right? And if you cut corners on production, if you cut corners on expenses, if you cut corners on absolutely essential expenses, if you allow the customer experience, to use that awful expression, to be secondary to the balance sheet, you're screwed.
Yeah, but at the same time, like I'll defend Al here. Al wasn't the cause.
Oh, no, I'm not saying it's Al, but I'm just saying the accountants don't come off very well in it.
But they, half of it was they allowed the commercial element to take over. So these commercial guys coming in and charging $5 a bottle of water type of thing. People are going, and it was that captive audience thing. They had no choice but to pay $5. Of course, that's going to drive you nuts, especially when you're full of all sorts of narcotics and the sun beating down in your head. You're going to go a bit nuts.
And then you decide to play Limp Bizkit as your headline act and say, oh, I think we'll have a sort of a chill out, kind of a chill out room. So they had, like, you went from, like, if you look at something like Electric Picnic, one of those big festivals, they've got like Body and Soul, they've chill out areas, they've Minefield, the major tent, they've, you know, all that sort of stuff. But there's kind of escape from the madness that you can actually go strolling. Whereas there, the only escape was from Limp Bizkit to the fucking rave. Right? So it was like, there was nothing. Anyway, I just thought it was an extraordinary example. I tell you what was an extraordinary example, John, of resources being depleted and a population explosion.
Exactly.
What you actually had was a perfect microcosm for what happens when too many people end up in the wrong environment, which was all asphalt. It wasn't grass. In other words, if you go to Slane or one of those big places are all together now, it's grass and it's rolling hills and it's all that Glastonbury, right? So it's kind of got a feeling of nature, right?
Yeah.
That you can walk away from the madness, whereas this was on an old airbase. It was all tarmac and asphalt and it was 100 degrees. And anyway, by the way, listeners, it's well worth watching. If you're actually doing nothing, turn on Netflix, Woodstock 99, Sodom and Gomorrah. Really quite shocking stuff. Anyway, we digress, John, as usual.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Let us, you were just talking to me earlier on about the environment. You were concerned about Germany and the Rhine.
Well, you know, like this comes up every year where, you know, the good weather comes in and the first thing we do is we get sunburned and then we start complaining. But this year, there's actually a good reason to complain and be a little bit worried. I was reading a few things recently, but one article in particular about the Rhine, the River Rhine in Germany, runs 800 miles from the Swiss Alps out to the North Sea. And it is a, it's an artery, it's a commercial artery for all of Europe.
Yeah, an amazing river, an amazing river.
Yeah, but the levels have dropped so low that a lot of the big barges that bring coal, chemicals, grains, the whole lot up and down that river that keep Europe running, the levels have got so low that they can't run. They can't sail down the river. So it's not only is it an environmental disaster, it's also a commercial and economic disaster.
Yeah.
You know, it's choking off Europe.
Well, it's an amazing thing you talk about the Rhine. I'll just give you a detail. I've done a little bit of traveling around the Mosel and the Rhine and around Mainz and that part. No, but that part of Germany interests me.
Yeah.
And there's an amazing sort of background noise. If you're walking on the Rhine, right, there's almost like a drum and bass thud of these huge barges. Right?
Yeah.
It's almost like drum and bass.
I know what you mean.
And they are huge. And as you said, they're carrying coal, they're carrying car parts, they're carrying everything.
Yeah.
And of course the German they've such an amazingly huge river that they've like inland ports like Dublin Port on the Rhine, built on the river. So it is an extraordinary. So what they're saying is that they're basically the drought in Europe this summer has got to a level which has never happened in the past. Is that what they're saying?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So they are essentially just a couple of centimeters off closing down the whole river. That's kind of scary.
That is very, very scary.
And that's just one of the main rivers in Europe. And there's still, you know, there's all the other tributaries and all the other rivers around Europe that similarly important.
You've got the Rhine, the Rhone, Danube, basically east to west. It's the most important river.
Yeah.
You've got the Elbe, you've got the Neckar, you've got the Oder, all these huge rivers. And they're all drying up this summer.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that brings us to the topic of discussion today, which is the return of Malthus, John. The return of Thomas Malthus, right? Now, what is happening all around the world? The Rhine is a good example of it. The drought in the Rhine and the death last week of James Lovelock, the British environmentalist, environmental scientist, who came up with his Gaia theory, you know, the idea of the world's Gaia.
Yeah, I read that book many, many years ago and I loved it. And it made so much sense. The whole thing about James Lovelock.
Yeah, this is your thing.
Yeah, he was a scientist and he was asked by NASA to kind of model how humans might live on Mars or any other planet. And he said the only way to look at that was to look at Earth and how the Earth works. And the more he looked at it, he kind of saw all these patterns and how things were linked, basically ecosystems, but how ecosystems were linked to other ecosystems and how essentially the planet as a whole worked as a self-regulating entity almost.
Exactly.
And it's an amazing theory and it's an amazing book. He died last week, as you say, on his 103rd birthday.
That's pretty impressive. That is pretty impressive. You know, but I mean, again, if you're interested in this sort of stuff, have a look. There's his book, the original book on Gaia, I think was written in the 70s or maybe before that, maybe the 70s. But there's a great book called The Return to Gaia, which he wrote in his 90s. And it's amazing. But the essential idea of all these, both theories and realities, is that the world has a finite set of resources And into this finite set of resources is crashing the demands or the requirements or the aspirations of 7 to 7.5 billion consumers. And the reason I say consumers is that's what humans are invoked now to be. Yes. Because of our consumer society. So it's no longer being just a general punter. You've got to be a consumer and consume stuff. Now, that brings us to Malthus, right? Now, Thomas Malthus.
Yeah, talk to me about Thomas Malthus.
Right. So Malthus wrote a book in 1798 called The Essay on the Principle of Population, which had a huge influence on economics, huge influence on Darwin, which I'll go on to explain to you in a little bit. But the general idea of Malthus was the following. He was looking backwards from, let's say, 1800, 1798, at the history of humanity. And he was trying to understand the relationship between population, economics, living standards, all that sort of stuff. And he came up with this idea that, in effect, we were hemmed in by and dominated by nature and natural forces. That we were, as Lovelock said, we were part of a self-regulating and self-disciplining concept called the globe.
Yes.
And nature disciplines us at certain levels. And what Malthus said, look, he looked back at the population, he said, look, what always happens is that you have a technological breakthrough at a certain stage. And this allows humans to get more out of the soil. He was largely talking about agriculture. And for a while, it works. So you have a technological breakthrough. So give the example, like, for example, the plow. You come up with the plow that changes the amount of Northern Europe that can be farmed because the plow, the metal plow, is very deep and it can farm moist clay. Yeah. That generates a huge population explosion over time. But what he says is that eventually two things happen. One is the resource that you acquired through this new technology is finite. So you only can produce a certain amount of wheat. And if your population increases dramatically, A, because fertility increases, B, because mortality decreases, and C, because there's a general sense of things getting better, what he says is that history would regard it that eventually the living standards falls because a greater population with a finite, even at a higher level, a finite resource will mean that the per capita amount of food falls and living standards go back to zero. He's trying to explain why living standards didn't seem to have risen very dramatically for thousands and thousands of years. That was his first idea. His second idea was that nature disciplines humans if we tend to have larger populations living more densely via epidemics and via famines. So, I mean, the epidemic is quite topical in terms of COVID. And of course, the famine, he was basically saying that what happens is populations over-cultivate, they become over-dependent on one or two crops, and ultimately you get an environmental or agricultural disaster or even a few bad years, and suddenly you get a decimation of the population.
Yeah, it's like when you have a monoculture of anything, and we have, and this is what you see across, you know, the prairies in America and the likes of Russia and Ukraine and wheat and stuff, that if you have a monoculture of anything, a disease hits and it spreads throughout the whole crop and you lose everything and you've nothing to replace it with.
You've nothing to fall back on now. So that was the Malthusian idea. And then he came up with this other interesting idea. He said there's two checks that humans check. So he said there's positive checks, which are the epidemic or the famine, which will basically just force the population down. And then he said, after that, human behavior changes and we have preventative checks. So we actually learn from that. And what we tend to do is we have less children, we marry later, all that sort of, in fact, in very ancient societies, they had infanticide and all these other ways of controlling the population. There was also, in ancient societies, various different ways of aborting children, various different naturally induced abortions. All of these were human ways of keeping. Wow. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And he's got a very fascinating thing. So what he basically says is that after a massive change in technology, you get a short-lived increase in prosperity. But over time, Gaia and the world readjusts backwards and humans tend to come back, right? And one of the things that this explains is something phenomenal, which is, if you go back to really deep anthropology, lots and lots of anthropologists are trying to figure out why hunter-gatherers were fitter, stronger, better fed, and lived longer than farmers. So our idea is that the hunter-gatherers became farmers because it was going to be better for them to do so, right?
Yeah. This comes from your man Harari, isn't it? The Sapiens.
Yeah, it even goes back further than Harari. But that sort of idea, right?
Yeah.
So that's the idea. So the big technology then is agriculture. That's the massive technology. That's a huge change in lifestyle, a huge change in the way in which we live. So humans, you would think, would have settled down only if the evidence was that this was better for us.
Mm.
And then people, archaeologists, found out, well, that seems to make logical sense. But when they found the bones of hunter-gatherers, which predated the domestic farmers by 5,000-6,000 years, what they found was they were bigger. Their bones were stronger. Their diets were more varied. They lived longer. They died later. So this, again, can be explained by Malthus. What Malthus said was, yes, we will go into a different state. And for a while, and that while could be 1,000 years, 2,000 years, we will feel better. But in actual fact, human existence, the quality of our life will be less good because of the dense population. Now, and of course, as Irish people, the greatest example of all this, John, is the famine.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah, and he was spot on in the famine. I mean, the potato was introduced in the late 1500s into Europe. At that stage, at 1600, the Irish population was about 1.2 million. By 1840, it was 8.2 again, or about 8 million. So you get this massive increase in the population. So the technology was the potato. We always think of a technology, that's the iPhone or something. No, it can be a food. Yeah. And it can be a way of, you know. And of course, as you said, it led to the monoculture you were talking about.
Yeah.
And you become over-dependent on one crop. And then suddenly that crop fails. Now, there was all sorts of other extraneous factors like laissez-faire, like Trevelyan, like the Brits. As my dad always said to me, if the famine had happened in Yorkshire, they wouldn't have died. And he's probably right, you know? But I mean, the essential Malthusian idea was that there were too many people trying to live off too finite a resource. Everything became increasingly fragile. In fact, Irish living standards plummeted during the 17th and 18th century because we had too many people. So imagine the island with 1.4 million people, right?
Mm.
Then you have the island with 8 million people, right? So the amount of mouths you have to feed, even with higher yields, is simply too much. So of course, the people themselves, their quality of life was actually declining, not increasing.
Let me ask you a quick question. Just want to take you back a few episodes back of a stat that you've quoted a couple of times about Nigeria and the population growth of Nigeria. By 2050, there'd be more Nigerians than Europeans.
Yeah.
If you apply the same Malthusian idea to Nigeria, will that actually happen?
Now, that's a fascinating thing because Ireland was probably the last great Malthusian example in the famine. Because what happened in the 19th and 20th century was extraordinary increases in agricultural productivity, extraordinary increases in medical science, and extraordinary increases in energy burning, in effect, propelled us away from the Malthusian trap. And we had this strange situation that more and more and more humans seems to be able to live on this same earth. And we got more and more from the earth, right? Now, what is happening now is that environmentalists are saying we have reached the limits of the earth's ability to feed 7.5 billion, to clothe, to heat, to sustain. So in effect, the Malthusians are saying, or the environmentalists are saying, we are going back to the firm, impeccable logic of Malthus. It's just the period of time that we thought we'd broken the link with Malthus lasted about 200 years. So from about let's say 1770 to, well, that's 250 years to now, right?
And
that's the fascinating thing, that what you're seeing in the drought, what Lovelock was saying at Gaia, really pits the environmental movement, who believe in steady state, zero growth, against the technologists who believe we're going to come up with something magical that will allow us to continue to consume, to grow, etc. And in effect, what you have is this, you know, this idea of the immutable object and the irresistible force. So you have the immutable object called the world's finite resources and the irresistible force of the world's population coming and smashing together. Yes. And that's the sort of catastrophe that the environmentalists are saying. And ironically, it means the rehabilitation, John, of Malthus. 200 years after he was regarded as old hat, he may well be back in the game again.
I was going to say that, you know, this argument raised its ugly head in the late 60s, early 70s as well, when they first thought that there was going to be a shortage of oil.
Yeah.
But of course, what happened was they discovered more oil and they keep discovering more oil. Now, we're probably not going to discover that much more oil now, but what we are discovering is new forms of energy, such as solar and wind, which could solve our energy problem and our climate change problem to a certain degree, but not necessarily our population problem.
Well, I mean, this is the whole thing, is that, you know, the preventative checks that Malthus talked about?
Yeah.
They're actually happening. The population of the West is falling rapidly. The population of China is falling rapidly. The population of Iran is falling rapidly. The great example, again, is Ireland. I mean, our population data since the 1970s has been collapsing. Now, that is an anti-Malthusian argument, because Malthus said, as the population rises, the living standards will fall. And there'll be preventative checks, right? But what we've seen in the last 30 years is, as living standards have risen, the population has actually fallen, not grown. So what you're getting is, you're getting the anti-Malthus idea in the West, but you're getting the old Malthus idea in the likes of Nigeria. And the hope is that it kind of balances itself out and the global population slows down, etc. But I think an interesting way to frame the discussion of the next 20 years will be, is Malthus back in the game, or will we, as you said, find new technologies to propel us forward and allow us to get more out of less, in effect?
Yeah.
And that's really going to be the fault line in economics, politics, in demography, and in our societies.
So maybe the new Malthus is going to be, and you're going to balk at this, I know, Elon Musk.
Ah, fuck off. I'm not having it. I'm not having it. We're not going there.
We're not having it, mate. I'm just not having it.
I'm not fucking having it.
So because
Elon Musk peddling Dogecoin is going to solve
forget about the Dogecoin. But him leaving the planet, maybe that's the next step. That's our new resource.
That was James Lovelock. And let's finish with Lovelock. James Lovelock's big idea was, this is it. There might be nothing out there. And if this is it, you got to protect it, because this is all we've got.
Dun, dun, dun.
And just before you go, we've started a new weekly Q&A exclusive for our Patreon supporters. Here's a clip from one of this week's questions.
But the question then is, whether or not the Turkish banks run out of hard currency, like the Lebanese banks did. And when the Lebanese banks ran out of hard currency, the hard currency savings of their punters were frozen. That's the first thing. Second thing, for you, the issue then is, if the lira is falling and you spend sterling, if you spend today, for example, if the lira is falling, but you operate a credit card, so you buy today, you pay later, you're probably going to do okay, right? Because the lira will be worth less against sterling in a month's time when you settle your accounts. However, and this is the big however, there is a yawning differential between, and there will become a yawning differential between, the official exchange rate and the unofficial exchange rate in a country like Turkey if it goes down the route of a currency crisis, where the Turks tried to get their money out as quickly as possible. So my advice to you in all these situations is, bring hard currency in your arse pocket. okay? You'll get a much better rate, number one. And number two, you won't be exposed to fluctuations and or the vagaries of the banking system and or the difference between the official exchange rate and the unofficial exchange rate. Always better, in my opinion, to go with the black market exchange rate than the government exchange rate. Why is that? Because the government needs to keep, this is answering your second part of your question, the government needs to keep the exchange rate artificially high in order to try and pay off the debts. So what they're hoping to do is borrow from you at a level, an artificially high level, pay down their debts, and play the arbitrage between you and the debt. So if I were you, just, Damon, if you're going on holidays there, just bring hard currency.
So if you have any questions or queries, and if you like what you hear and would like to join the gang on Patreon, where you can ask questions of Mac, along with lots of other stuff, like two full macroeconomics courses with notes and reading lists and all that kind of good stuff, then join us on patreon.com/DaveMacWilliams. Talk to you next week.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.